In this episode of Man vs. Marriage, we're going to talk about autism. I'll switch the game on you. Welcome back to another episode of Man vs. Marriage. It is I, the Q Diggity Dog, in the Moran Family Studio with my lovely wife, Jeannie. Jeannie, what's up?
Not much.
You're looking good in that Man vs. Marriage podcast hoodie.
Thank you. I don't believe you, but thank you.
Well, I'm not going to say it if it's not true. I got my shirt on and my hat. Not very proud of the hat, but I digress. Thanks for being here. And for those of you who don't know, who are faithful to the audio game, that's right, your boy and yo gal, Jeannie and Quincy, we are now solid on video. What's the goal? Put out 3 video podcasts a month and do one live so you guys can join and interact with us. So that's pretty exciting. Yeah, yeah.
That's news to me.
I would say that they couldn't see the look on your face, but now with video, they can. Which is pretty awesome. So with that, make sure that you review the show, rate the show, send us an email, quincy@mvsmpodcast.com. One day we're going to be sophisticated enough where we'll throw it up on the screen. And those days are coming. We got big plans for this. We got big plans, period. And we're going there. So thank you very much for being here. Today we're going to talk about autism. I've told my story about autism a few times. And what's interesting is I do a Bible study with my uncle Bill, my aunt Cindy, and it's growing. It's a cool little Bible study. We did it over like FaceTime, but then we had some people join up that are Androids, they're not iPhones, so then we had to change the game. So now we're doing it on Zoom, but it's really cool. We're doing the Tim Tebow book, and with that, there's a part in the book where Tim asks you to write a poem, like write a story or a poem about how faithful God has been to you. And Uncle Bill, he's called Wild Bill in the BS podcast, if you listen to that, but he said, hey, we want to know about your conversion story. We want to know about your testimony. And I got to thinking about it. It's like, shoot, man. I talk to people about God all the time. I talk to people about praying for them all the time. But how long has it really been since I've shared my testimony? And my testimony in my faith. Hmm. I share my testimony in my marriage all the time, 52 times a year, because I'm doing that on this podcast. But it was a great moment or collection of moments to really think about what did I want to tell. And what's interesting is some of these people I know intimately because they're my family members, so we know about each other's life. And then some of these people I just know from the Bible study from the past year. And so we got to listen to people's story, what their journey is. And there were things I told, you know, on the Bible study that even my close family members didn't know. You know, my daughter was on there. My sister Ada was on there. My aunt, my uncle, my cousin were on there. A distant cousin was on there. They didn't know those things. And so it just came to the point where it's like, sometimes I'm going to open up a little bit more about this autism thing. I'm going to let the Spirit kind of direct me in my conversations so that I can open up about this autism thing, because there's a lot of beauty, there's bliss, and there's also a lot of pain and loneliness. There's a lot of suffering that comes along with it. And, you know, people are kind enough to share their stories that they find on Instagram or Facebook or TV when it's like, oh, look at the great things this autistic child is doing They're nonverbal, but they can play Mozart, or they're nonverbal, but you know, they can paint like Michelangelo, or they're nonverbal, but they do X, Y, or Z like a savant. And while that's appreciated, and I know the heart of where that's coming from, it's not our brand of autism.
No.
And so, and it's interesting that they call autism a spectrum. But I'll tell you, some of the sweetest moments in my life have been at the hands of autism.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the most difficult, heart-wrenching times in my life have been at the hands of autism. And it's tough. It's hard. And you think the more you do something, the better you get at it. You think the more, you know, it's like 10,000 hours of anything makes you an expert. But that's not the case. It's real interesting. So how are you doing with autism right now? Because I want you to have the opportunity to speak about it.
Me?
And then I'll speak about it as well.
Right now it's kind of shaky. I mean, I will say about 3 weeks ago, I had probably one of the best moments, just because Kiki and Hunter were watching Little Bear, which they haven't been watching in a long time. And her giggle is probably one of my most favorite things in the world. Not when she's, you know, haha, I'm funny, and she's, you know, being sarcastic. She has a genuine giggle that just, it's like when you have a little toddler that just, you start tickling them. It's that giggle. She has had, it never matured. It's still that giggle. So there are those moments still that I get. You know, Bubba sometimes will come and remind me he's my sweet boy. Those moments are good, but lately they're both, I think they're just struggling, and I think that they're trying to figure out how to communicate it, and it's just not working right. Like, Bubba is just communicating out of anger. All his is all anger, and it's the same. It's scripted. I mean, it's the same stuff.
Yeah.
But I think that me being down and not being his regular routine, I think having his little sisters taking care of him is getting frustrating to him. And it's hard for me, because there's a part of you that, you know, you understand and you want to help them, because that's, you know, they're struggling with it. And there's another side, I'm not going to lie, that gets so frustrated and angry, and just, if you could just stop, it would be great. You know, I mean, I'm sure if he could, he probably would, but he just can't.
Yeah.
That's what's hard for me, is I feel like an a-hole when I get mad. But at the same time, it's just like, I kind of want to yell at God and be like, can we have a pause? Can we have like a silent breather where we can all just stop, regroup? We don't really get those. I mean, until they fall asleep. That's even been off for him for quite a while, especially since you've been, well, since we've moved here, it's better.
It has its moments of better.
I have noticed a few things that, and I try to accommodate as much as I can.
Tell me so we can celebrate together.
When you leave and you have to be gone overnight, Hunter prefers to sleep on the couch. I don't know if it's because he wants to be by mom, or if it's just a comfort thing for him. But when you're not home, he likes to sleep on the couch. He does not like to be in his room. He does not like to be alone. If he does go in his room, he will stay up all night long till like 5, 6 in the morning. And then when he finally falls asleep, he'll sleep till maybe 10. If he can get away with it, depending on what our schedule is. I have noticed thunderstorms freak him out, but instead of having meltdown moments, he's learned to kind of, I don't know how to say, he's learned what he needs to adapt. He wants to sleep on the couch. He wants his weighted blanket. He wants the windows covered. He doesn't want to see the lightning. Like, he's learned how to communicate that stuff. But he won't tell you that it scares him. He won't tell you that, you know, he'll tell me it makes him nervous.
Yeah. Yeah. But he'll get behaviors that make him, you can tell his anxiety.
Oh yeah. His anxiety is going through.
I used to not understand what it was about him. Like when his energy would just like ramp up like crazy. And then finally I got to the point where it's like, this dude's got some anxiety going on. Mm-hmm. And so I ask him, Hunter, are you nervous, buddy? Yes, I'm nervous. I'm like, okay, well, let's cool it down here a little bit. And then, you know, just try to allow myself to be, the level of peace.
Yeah.
So that he can function.
Well, that's why we've started going back to like Little Bear. As much as he gets upset and he complains, you know, he doesn't want to watch the baby shows. As soon as you put him on it, he goes right back to that little boy and it's calm for him. Like he giggles along with it. He sings the songs with it. I don't know how to explain it other than to say it's almost like it rewinds him a little bit and puts him at that little boy level where he's just calm.
Yeah.
And it chills him out. And I don't want to force that to him because he is adamant. I am a big boy. I am 22. I am a big boy. And he wants to do big boy things. But there are moments that it's just like, buddy, you got to be like 6 right now. Your body and your brain need you to just be 6. And it slows him down. That's why I've stockpiled the scratcher artwork. Because he will sit for hours and just scratch the pictures. And he gets really frustrated if anybody else touches him. It calms him. It puts him in a place of concentration and he relaxes. But I think what it really does is it focuses his mind on something. And without something like that, he's all over the place.
Yeah.
And right now it's getting a little bit harder because everybody else is doing older things. The girls are getting older. They're getting to do big girl things and he doesn't get to do big boy things. And it's not for lack of want. It's just, he can't do them by himself. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of heart-wrenching at times because he knows enough to know. When I was telling a buddy of mine from work the other day, he knows enough to know. Because you guys may not know this, but I have a niece. Jeannie and I have a niece that was born same day, same year, same hospital, 1 hour later than mm-hmm. Hunter. So he's her older cousin. And he sees the things that she's doing, and somehow he knows that's what he's supposed to be doing. He knows that after high school comes college, thanks to Blue's Clues, you know. Yeah. He knows that after high school comes college, you get a job, he wants a girlfriend, at one time wanted 2,000 sons. Like, you know, he's like, how many kids you want? I want 2,000 boys. And he knows
someone just like that.
He knows these things. And yet many of those things are not going to be in the cards for him, save a miracle. And there have been some extremely tumultuous times. Just if you're new to Man Versus Marriage, just a very brief summary of Jeannie and I. The company, I was living in Alabama going to college and came back to California because my parents were divorced, so I kind of went back and forth between there. I was in my freshman year of college. Had just completed that. Came out for a summer visit, like I always did, and decided to stay, and I was going to play football at the local junior college. Well, when they told me the price for somebody who's out of state, like, my mother's a resident, so why didn't I just say I was a resident? Anyway, I'm going to tell the truth,
yeah.
Which, you know, is right.
That's
but
what you have me for. Just kidding.
I think the cost was like 2 or 3 times. And I was like, dang. I said, maybe I'll just get a job and then I'll play football the next year. Never went back to college. I did some Bible college, but never went back to that college. And I did try again, but then the credits that, who cares? Get to the point. So I started at this company. My cousin by marriage, who's now one of my best friends on the planet, got me an interview, did me a solid, and I knew nothing about this industry. And the guy said, well, we'll take a chance on you. So my very first day was Jeannie's last day.
And I never went to work because I was in Vegas.
She went to Vegas for her last day.
You better believe it. I got all my PTO before I quit. I'm not stupid.
And then...
give me my money.
She called in sick that day, and I took her phone call. Never met her. Had never talked to her. She says, you know, after time, and we kind of realized what had happened, she's like, who's this guy with a southern accent?
That was interesting. That was very interesting.
And so we ended up meeting through a mutual friend because she had a friend that worked there. And I became friends with this guy and his family who worked there. And he had me babysitting. And I'm game for anything. I'm like, I love kids. Yeah. Church, whatever. I love kids. I'll babysit.
Sucker.
And hey, man, I was so in good seed. Little did I know I'd need a lot of babysitting in my life. And so.
That's fair.
So. He had a couple of kids in diapers, and I'm like 19, and I'm like...
He had one that was still nursing.
I was like, bro, I'm good to watch these kids, but I need some help with these little ones. Like, I need some help. And so he had actually tried to set me up with another gal before and didn't work out. And when I was watching the kids, he said, well, I want to introduce you to this girl named Jeannie. And he showed me a blue 3x5 card. He said, here's her schedule. So we're going to get you guys together. I looked at her schedule. It involved prayer, school, Bible study, babysitting, et cetera. I said, hey, I don't know who this girl is, but on paper, she's hot. I had no idea how hot this chick actually is and was. And so I knew this was going to be a setup. I got so nervous, I brought two friends with me. And so she shows up, and she's like, what is going on here?
And you called me, and you have two other people here.
Yeah, yeah. So thankfully, the guy that she was dating at the time, that night, who she was supposed to go on a date with, decided he wanted to be on a break. And so she came in there, really had nothing to lose, probably was not looking for anybody. I went in to meet her for the first time, still extremely nervous.
With a
kid on my back doing a piggyback ride, and I saw her, and instantly I was just mad. I was pissed off because here I am, you know, a 320-pound whopper, not really an attractive dude, you know, just I'm not this material. And there is a supermodel with long flowing blonde hair, bumps in all the right places, and just absolutely gorgeous. And I'm like, what is this dude thinking? She's so far out of my league, it's like, there's no chance here. So I just let all the nervousness gone because I'm like, there's no chance this is going to happen. Then we sat down, we got to talking, and it's like, oh, you work there. Oh, okay. Well, we had commonality there, and we talked and talked and talked and talked that night about sports, about fishing, about life, about work, about what we wanted for our future. And it was a great conversation. Stop me if I'm getting this wrong. It was a great conversation. And we decided to stay friends. And, you know, it came time for her and her boyfriend on a break to decide if they were going to continue. They didn't. And so we stayed friends after that. This is how good Jeannie is. Okay, listen to this. I had gone on a date with this girl down in another city where there was a theme park. And I was like, shoot, man, I've gone there and we're going together with a couple of our other friends. I'm like, what if I see this girl? And I don't remember what she said, but, you know, Jeannie was like, well, we'll just make her jealous or whatever it was she said. I was like, oh,
I'll be your date for the day.
Yeah, this girl's in the game. And so that's like the
first. I don't like people being mean to good people.
Well, she wasn't mean. She just couldn't date me. Because I'm not Mormon. And I didn't realize the degree of that. I didn't understand it. It's like, well, I'm Church of God, you're Baptist. Hey, let's hang out together. But Mormonism is not that way. So when we were there, you know, we actually got a lot closer. And there were some places where it was cold, so she needed to be wrapped in somebody's arms, and why not me?
Yeah.
So we did some of that. And we just really I think we're really taken back with each other and didn't really spend much time apart from each other after that. So
we
fast forward.
We didn't spend much time away from each other from the first night we met at Manny's house. We were always talking and...
Yeah.
I mean, I was with... I wasn't with him, but I was waiting. I was on a break, and it was his choice. He had some decisions to make between colleges and baseball and things like that. And I'm the type of person that if I'm committed, I'm committed. And if you want to walk, you can walk. But if you're waiting for me to tell you to walk, I'm not going to make that choice for you.
Well, we're alike in that way too.
But
it's like, this is, I gave my word, so
I was happy as hell when he told me he wasn't coming back. I ain't gonna lie, because I had already made up my mind that if he didn't do it, I was gonna.
Well, fast forward, Jeannie and I get married, and you know, we wanted to have a family. We didn't spend a lot of time married before we started trying to have a family. And it came down to it that we weren't getting pregnant, and we didn't know if it was her situation, because she had some medical challenges when she was younger, or if it was me. And so they told her it was probably likely that she couldn't have kids. And then I got myself tested and got the phone call and said, dude, shooting blanks, not happening for you. And that was terrible. That was terrible. And 30 minutes later, they called back and said, hey, sorry, wrong test.
Results.
And it was bittersweet for me. Well, why is it bittersweet, Quincy? Well, I got good news, but what if they called some other guy and told him he was good to go?
And now they got to call him and tell him that he can't.
Yeah. And I was like, ugh. And that's kind of plagued me for a long time. Not my responsibility, but still, I knew how it felt.
Yeah.
To get the call and then to get the call, you know, and it's like, I felt like I was broken. And that's not true. I mean, it felt like that. So, Jeannie and I, you know, she wanted to have four kids. I think three boys and a girl. I wanted to have boys, and I wanted a girl, but I wanted to have boys. I'm built in such a way where I want to leave a legacy. My name means something to me. Mentoring young men, mentoring men means something to me. I've been that for such a long time. Like, my dad would tell you when I was in high school, I would work until like 10 p.m., get home at 10:30, sit at the table and blab away, giving people advice. Not even entering my mind that his room is right there, and if I'm blabbing my mouth, he can't sleep.
You know, that's a familial trait.
It is.
Because we have children that don't realize that our bedroom is on the other side of that wall right there, and they will sit up and talk and watch TV and listen to music.
Yeah.
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 It's a familial trait.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is something that, you know,
I love y'all, but when you get your own house and I come to visit, oh, I'm gonna be right outside that room turning that TV up. I'm just letting you know now.
So we ended up getting pregnant. Boy, first time. And then Hunter was born, and he wasn't perfect. I know what you're laughing about.
Oh, my poor conehead baby with Rod Stewart hair.
He wasn't perfect. He had a deformity. And
that wasn't his cone head, by the way.
No. You know how that goes, the birthing canal. But he had a deformity. He had microtia. One of his ears didn't develop.
Has.
Yeah, he has microtia. One of his ears didn't fully develop. The canal is small. He has hearing loss on that side. And
we told him an angel kissed him.
I never told him that.
I did.
Yeah. Anyway, that would not be the most difficult part of this young man's life. And I didn't know what that meant. So we kind of got into it, and thankfully, you know, God takes, he can take situations and somehow make some sort of good out of them if you trust him to do so. And I take the standpoint that Hunter's development was nature. I don't believe that God was like, pop, you know, you're gonna have microtia. But some people may believe differently. I'm just giving you my take.
No, I can tell you what Dr. Danzo said caused it. It's because of the way that he was in my stomach and in the birth canal. He was pressed up against my hip bone inside. So he said it's possible that because his head was pushed up against my bone, that when it was trying to develop, it just didn't have the space. And Hunter was a pain in the butt and didn't move a whole lot. I was little bitty with him. I mean, I had a basketball pooch with him. The triplets spread that all
different
over the place.
Yep.
But Hunter was very small. I'm at the time of pregnancy, I was 5'4". I might have been maybe 115 pounds, mm-hmm. if that. And I didn't gain but 10 pounds when I carried him. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't a whole lot of space in there for him. And according to how the doctor explained it, it was just, he could have been pushed up against something and he never moved. That's why he came out with the cone head, because he sat in the same position over a long period of time and his head just developed in the position that he was in.
Well, I said this was going to be a quick story and it wasn't. So
you lied.
Let me speed it up. So we had Hunter, and then Jeannie got pregnant with triplets, and then Jeannie got pregnant with another one, and then Jeannie got pregnant with twins, and then Jeannie got pregnant with another one.
Magically, this all happened like poof, we done.
It's pretty magic for me.
That's a fast forward story right there.
Yeah. Buddy. And so there was absolute turmoil in our life. I mean, life happens, but we had more than our share based on the community around us. And this is not me saying poor me. This is me just trying to give you what
we
reality is.
We created our share. We own that.
We did.
We created our share.
And so
it just came with extras we weren't planning on.
There are just difficulties that come along with having preemie children. And, you know, five of those kids were preemie. And they had to spend the first part of their life in the ICU. It's what can happen. But then they were diagnosed with autism. And really, it was kind of a shell shock the way it happened with Hunter. I denied it for a while.
So did I. So to be fair, with Microtia, he has a 70% hearing loss. And when you look up the symptoms and the development of a child who has that significant of a hearing loss, they have very similar symptoms and findings as a child with autism. Because his communication was difficult.
Yeah.
He can't fully hear what you're saying. He's as a young boy, one side is trying to compensate for the other. And if there's multiple sounds going on, he couldn't differentiate them. He was trying, but he couldn't. And so, like when he was an infant, he didn't develop on time. So we took to learning sign language right away as a little boy, you know, at 6-7 months, we started working with him for basics, just to have something to work with for food or drinks or what have you. By the time he was a year, he was starting to try to take steps, but wasn't fully there yet. I think he was just really starting to get on the move when I went in the hospital with the triplets, actually.
Yeah, and had no idea if your child doesn't crawl, there's developmental delays.
He skipped crawling completely. He never crawled. He rolled.
And your child needs crawling to assist the brain.
It develops both sides of the brain.
Yeah, to assist the brain in learning depth perception.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that, but it's the movement of crawling that helps your brain grow there.
So,
and Hunter didn't have it.
What we ended up finding out is Hunter has difficulty with depth perception. He doesn't process the way that a typical mind would. This is before we found out about autism. He, you know, like Hannah is an auditory processor, which means Hannah can hear a song or a story and not be looking at anything and memorize it. Boom. She just picks it up. Now the words don't always stick, but she got the information at a very young age. So we learned, like with math on paper sucked for her. But if I gave her a verbal math problem, she could spit it out. She just couldn't tell you how she got the answer. Hunter is very different because he doesn't have the auditory. Some things he picks up, some things he doesn't. We found out that he is a visual learner, but he is a tactile learner. So when he got into second grade, between first and second grade, I had started taking sign language classes at college and determined I wanted to see if this would work. It wasn't that he couldn't talk. He could talk. He talks like he's got marbles in his mouth. But he can talk, and he can communicate to a degree. He can't hold a true conversation for long. But we had to figure something out. We had to get some kind of development. And we found out that if I signed a story to him, he retained 60 to 80% more than if he read the story himself and tried to reiterate information. So the things that he was already struggling with, having been hard of hearing, they're all very similar to the same delays and difficulties and learning disabilities that you would find in an autistic child. The behaviors didn't start like progressing until about between second and third grade, when he couldn't understand something. Like if he wrote something on his paper and he got it wrong, he had a one-on-one aide. Love him to death. He is still our friend to this day. But if he would get something wrong and the teacher would erase it, Hunter lost his mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because you just erased all of his work. You couldn't just tell him, okay, hold on, we got to fix it, and have him erase it. He wouldn't do it. He had to start over and do it again because he couldn't handle you wiping it out and pissing him off. So he got to where if you said homework, he had a conniption. And it was just the word. It was just a word. That's what made him mad. Because if I brought him home and we did homework, he would do his homework. We just didn't call it homework. We learned to call it practice, because when you go to baseball, you go to practice. I could practice, Mom. Sure. Let's practice math, dude.
Okay. The only one that struggles with that is Allen Iverson. Anyway.
Anyway, we learned the hard way when Hunter was 8 that he was autistic. So we missed several years of what could have helped us with him, because Kirsten and Hannah were diagnosed much younger. Hannah was diagnosed at 2.5 because of, 2 years, 9 months. She had a major seizure, and then things just kind of started happening from there, and they immediately knew. We were in the doctor's office for Hannah, and Kirsten was sitting on my lap, and we're sitting on the table, and Hannah's over in the stroller talking to the doctor, and the doctor's asking her questions, and Kirsten's over here watching out the window as a tree swaying, just back and forth, got little flowers on it. Kirsten's perfectly content watching that tree sway back and forth. The doctor's playing with noisy toys, lights, sounds, got different. The other two, Gracie's in the room. They're all looking around. They're getting happy because there's all these things. Kirsten's just watching the tree, chilling out. And the doctor started asking some other questions and started watching Kiki's response to things and how she did things. And she goes, well, this one, she's definitely on the spectrum, but she's a little higher. I'm sure we could work things out for her and get her the help that she needs, and she'll probably be able to develop almost normal, but not quite. Okay. The deciding factor on that was going to be the seizures and what they could possibly do. For Kirsten, now Kirsten wasn't there for the appointment. She was just there because she's a triplet and I didn't have a babysitter.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor says she, however, is definitely autistic and not the higher functioning kind.
What a great way to find out.
Crushed me to pieces, because I thought she's always been a quiet baby. She doesn't cry hardly at all. She's quite content on her own. She does her own thing. She had certain toys that she liked, but she just wasn't real playful. But she I thought she wasn't playful because she didn't like being around other kids. Like other kids would, if it was just her triplets and Hunter, she loved Hunter. I don't know what happened there. But for now, when she was smaller, though, it was like other people's kids would come around. She's like, no. I just thought she was a happy kid. She was quiet. She didn't fuss too much. She entertained herself. She loved the swing.
She ate the easiest out of anybody. She ate
everything you put in front of her.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't do it now. But I just thought, thank God, I finally have one that's just chill. You know. And we find out, no, she's not normal. That's part of the autism. Okay. And then we started clocking it. We started paying attention to little things. And by her 5th birthday, I have photos to prove it. I swear to you, I know. After her vaccination series got done, and somewhere just at her fifth year, I can't tell you it's the vaccinations wholeheartedly, but I can tell you they played a part. Because
something changed,
and this little girl became completely different. I mean, the behaviors, tantrums, screaming, she couldn't communicate, she couldn't talk. We had very little words. If you told her no, she didn't know what it meant. I mean, we thought, you know, put your kid in timeout. Timeout don't do nothing for this kid. Spank her butt doesn't do nothing for her. She didn't get it.
Yeah.
Like, nothing clicked. And between her and Hunter, it was just like, we were in an IEP for Kirsten. And the psychologist says, well, her brother's autistic too. And we're thinking, pardon my French, fuck you. No, he's not. And yeah, lo and behold.
Yeah. And that's why I say there were some things, like, I looked at this list and they're asking you questions and I'm like, no, not my only son.
Yeah.
Not my only son. He does it. I'm justifying. He does it because of this. And it's probably like explaining it away, which is really tough, because if your child is on the autism spectrum, and the spectrum is broad, but the idea is to get help as quickly as possible. And what does that help look like? It's kind of different for everybody else, but I, you know, not to say that I stood in the way, because we still had, services to help him with the speaking, with, you know, the sign language, with helping him develop in that area.
But it was for hard of hearing. It was not for autism.
Right.
Had we known, there would have been a lot more on board.
There probably would have. All I can tell you, and the reason I wanted to talk about it, is because there have been some really tumultuous times. Now, Hunter, he asked questions about everything over and over and over again. And when he was younger, he would ask friends and family members, like, say you have two kids, he would ask them questions about food, about colors, about sports, about everything.
What's your dog's name?
Yeah, and he would remember it.
Oh, yeah, he categorized it.
He would order, like,
files in his head.
He would order it and say, like, okay, well, you know, however he would ask it, who's your oldest child? So when he would see these people again, he would ask them questions according to house number two.
Yeah.
And they're like, what? And so when he would come to Jeannie or I, he would say something about number three or number five. And we couldn't figure out what he was talking about until we figured out it was the kids.
He ordered the kids. The children.
And so he would ask at random times, how is so-and-so, and how is this child, and how is their dog, or their favorite color is X, Y, and Z. I mean, he struggled in school, but somehow he could remember those types of things, and it was really interesting. And there's a bright side to that, but then there's also a really difficult side to that, because at the age of five, his Grammy and Papa moved to Idaho, and he wanted to move to Idaho, and I told him no. And for more than 18, going on 18 years, he can't get past it. He holds me accountable for that.
Well, he's been better about it lately, I think, unless it came up recently.
Well,
it used to be every time he got pissed off about something, that was the first thing he said. You told me no. You told me I can't go to Idaho. He hasn't done that in a really long time.
True, but it's with him, if I'm correct, it's connected. Because everything he doesn't have in his life is my fault. It's my fault. It's a, whether it's a phone or a girlfriend or a car, he can articulate that it's my fault.
Yeah, but
especially when he gets upset.
Yeah, but he tells me it's my fault too when he gets pissed off and he starts going in his rant and he's got to go to his room because he's being an a-hole. And, you know, he's like, I don't have a phone and it's your fault. It's like, you do have a phone and you're not getting it because it's your fault for being a turd. But he's adamant when he's angry, it's whoever is doing something or telling him what he doesn't want to hear, it's their fault. I think you're taking it personal because you still hold guilt for some things for him, because I don't think that he's really necessarily saying you per se, but in general, like, whoever is pissing him off at that moment is who's at fault. It's kind of like Kiki when she gets mad and it's your fault, Mom. Yeah, well,
sure. I mean, that's a perspective you can have, but I remember for several years in a row that him telling me he didn't want my last name.
Well, yeah.
He didn't want to be my son. And that
he wanted to go live with Papa because Papa was retired and Papa gets to play and have fun.
I know. And I'm the adult and I'm the neurotypical, I guess. And I can take all those things and put them into perspective. It doesn't make him hurt any less, especially when he continues to say it and try. And yeah, in the moment, he probably is blaming you that he doesn't have his phone.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, for he and I, it goes deeper than that. It's been very consistent over the years. So I really, really struggled for a long time because all I ever wanted was a son. You know, I wanted a son, and I wanted that son to be able to carry on our family name. And, you know, you imagine your son growing up at some point becoming your buddy and having a family of his own. And, you know, those are the things you want for your children, whether they want them for themselves or not. Those are the things you want for them, your children. And that's not in the cards for him. It's not in the cards for me. Now, fortunately, having as many daughters as I do, I'll have some sons-in-law, and I've had to accept that in my life. It's difficult for me, and it's heart-wrenching for me. And it went back. I didn't really understand that I had a kind of a grudge toward God for a while until I said it out loud because Hunter wasn't perfect when he was born. He didn't meet my expectation of what a perfect child is supposed to be, just physically. But like I say, you know, God can take those things and use those situations to really change people's lives. Now, what's the difficult part of autism? Gene and I don't necessarily agree that he holds only me, and I will submit that it is true. Whoever's in front of him, he is telling them, shut up, or whatever.
Stop talking out your ass.
Yeah, and he does his fair share of swearing at me, and I'm trying to figure out how to maneuver that. But there are times, like, depending on whose techniques you follow and what you do, sometimes your autistic child can get so riled up that they cannot even be comfortable in their own skin.
Yeah.
And so there are times, like, especially when they're younger, that, you know, you just have to kind of sit and put your weight on that child. And there's like screaming going on.
Kiki would scream and scream and scream. And then in between, she'd take a breath and go, thank you, Mom. Thank you, Dad. And yeah, just keep screaming, like,
and that's,
okay, I guess we're doing what's right because she's thanking us for giving her the weight. But yeah, at the same time, she can't stop screaming. And you're like, am I doing this right? Am I not doing this right?
And a lot of times it's to prevent that child from hurting his or herself. And it's interesting because I heard Kevin James talking to Joe Rogan about this and how he had to do that for his daughter. And it was crazy because at that moment I was like, oh, you freaking get me, dude.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know me, but you get me. Because especially the way that I'm built, these hands are not meant to harm my children at all.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been times where I've had to save my other children from my child. There's been times I had to save my wife from my child. There's been times where I've had to save myself from my child. And these are things that wear on you. I don't know, but I've never been a mother, but as a father, you are a source of protection for your family. And, you know, to have to dodge or catch a punch, you know, to be busted in the eye with your child's head because you're not positioned in the right way, or to even hold or put weight on your child like we've had to do in the past, it hurts me. Even though in deep down I know it's helping, it hurts that I'm having to do this, because it's your child.
It is one of the places that I thank God that you were a wrestler, though. Because you know how to properly administer your weight and where to put it without hurting them.
Yeah.
You know, if you hadn't learned how to do that when you were younger, as big as you've been over the years, who knows what that would have done, but you know exactly how to position yourself. I mean, even now, thinking back, we had a monkey backpack for Kiki, and I put ankle weights in it. And that kid, she wouldn't go to school without that backpack. She had to have that weight on her.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like such a subtle thing, but even now we have weighted blankets. And when Kiki, that's why I was looking today when the girls were talking about laundry and stuff. I'm like, wash that blanket. It's been sitting in there for however long. And she's getting louder and louder. And I'm thinking about it. And it's like, I can tell her to go sit in a chair and let's cover your toes. And as soon as you put that warm weighted blanket on her, she stops yelling.
Yeah. And that's, and that over the years, you know, there have been some encounters that stand out just with me and Hunter. And it was probably 3 years ago. No, it's been 2.5 and going on 3 in Texas. So it's probably been more like 5 years ago. And Hunter and I were really, really just going at it. Like, he is screaming at me, telling me, like you've heard, it's my fault. Everything's my fault. And he's getting combative and he's starting to kind of act out and, you know, wants to bow up or just getting crazy.
He wants to, and then he backs down real fast.
Well, in this particular instance, I had to hold him.
Yeah.
You know, and he's an adult at this time, but I had to hold on to him, and he is just thrashing around and just enraged. And I held him and held him and held him, and finally something broke, like mentally something broke open, and he was able to breathe and just like kind of calm himself down. And then we're both laying on his bed, you know, just laying up looking at the ceiling, and he starts bawling. He just starts crying, and it's hard for him to articulate a lot of things. But I don't know if it was like the mental exhaustion from the experience we just went through, but he just started sobbing, talking about, I don't have anybody. I don't have a job. I don't go to college. I don't have a girlfriend. And he's saying this to me. And what can I say to him? He goes, I have no one. I have no one. Do you know what that means, Dad? I have zero. And my heart is just breaking for this kid. And I don't know how to make it better. I don't know how to give him what it is that will ease his soul, because it's stuck. It's stuck there. And I want so badly to be able to relieve that disappointment and that struggle in him. I want so badly to be able to resolve those resentments that he has for life. The things that he wants desperately, but he doesn't have. And I can't fix that. And there's no cliche to make the pain go away that makes it all better. And so you get to the point sometimes, and this had to happen the other day, where he was yelling and screaming and cussing at me. And usually it's about speak respectful, know your boundaries, Hunter. But in this moment, it was like, okay, son, get angry. I'll take all you got. I can handle it all.
Yeah.
So give it to me. Just let it out. Give it to me. Just in hopes that some of that might shake loose and might
let
be able to come
out. Let all
the
air out of the balloon, yep.
And so I had to hold him, and he was struggling, and he was mad, and he was screaming. And then finally, again, it just kind of broke. And, you know, it kind of just died down a little bit. And we were able to kind of come back to each other. And it's interesting, because people, like, my intent, my intention in my heart is to build people, because I love people. And people say, you know, great things about me, that, you know, you're good. You love people. You're going to make a difference in this world. And I so want to be able to do that. And I believe to a degree I do. But there is nothing that makes me feel like a failure faster than this autism thing. And I understand that this is something that they can't control. And sometimes we're able to kind of rightly divide what it is, when it's a behavior and when it's autism.
Yeah.
But as a parent, you know, you're looking at your son who knows he's in his 20s. And the things that he wants the most in his heart, he's not going to have. You can't give it to him, and you cannot make it better. And the hard thing, the harsh reality is that those things are stuck in him. Mm-hmm. Like
he sees it. It's all around him.
Well, it's like the way that he categorizes things. The hard thing is that it seems to be the negatives that stick around. It's the negatives that tend to play in his mind the most. And there's been some great lessons for me where it's like, am I just focusing on the things I don't have? There's lessons that come along. There's also equally these moments, you know, if I go to hug him for bedtime, he'll kiss me 50 times on the cheek. Love you, Dad! And it's like, that's amazing. When he is saying his prayers at night, or if someone is sick and they need prayer, or if he's doing his artwork, like being able to express himself in his own way for something that he's proud of,
mm-hmm.
and he can say
what do
that
you
he's
think
proud
about that.
Yeah, and he's happy about that. And so
he loves to tell people, if you're doing a great job, be proud of yourself. He loves to tell people.
He does. And he kind of screws it up and it's kind of marble mouth, but he loves to, like you say,
he wants to encourage you.
He's
doing
like,
great.
He's like, be proud of yourself and your job. And so, you know, just kind of working with him there. But I can't help but think as I'm going through these things, and there are times where I just feel like an abject failure, that there are other people out there who are experiencing these things. And just to let you know, I don't want a pity party. I'm not telling you this. I'm not being this vulnerable so that you feel sorry for me. Not that you are, but I just want to put that out there. I'm telling you because I want you to know that you're not alone in the struggles you are going through. Jeannie and I have had to come to the realization over the last few years that save miracles, we're not going to get that part of our marriage where the kids grow up and go do their thing, and then it's just us. That's not going to happen. And that's been a hard reality.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other reality, you don't want to be morbid, but then the other reality is when you pass away, who's going to be responsible for these children? Who's going to be responsible for these adults and take care of them and love them like you do? Because I'm going to tell you, I thank God that these two children were given to us. Because I wouldn't trust anybody else.
No.
To love these kids like we love these kids. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of learning that goes along with this. And you know, there are times where it gets really hard to deal with when my son is like, you know, given me the best he has because he can't stand me in the moment. And, you know, then there's other perspective that comes where it's like you hear a story of someone whose child is nonverbal and they've never heard their kid say, I love you. But I get that. Even from Kirsten, I get that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of helps you understand that as tough, as challenging, and as difficult as it is, there are people out there who might be suffering a little bit worse. So that was some levity. That was some perspective that I needed to know. This is simply the cards that we've been dealt. As difficult as it is for us, it's just as difficult for them, I would imagine, because my son knows that he's supposed to be doing these other things. He knows because he's watched me do it,
mm-hmm.
his entire life. He's watched me raise a family with my wife. He's watched me, you know, have a home and have a job.
You know, one of the coolest things about that boy. Bring him a baby. When a friend of ours had her little boy, I was always worried, you know, because you never know. Kiki is a live wire sometimes, so obviously we don't put babies too close to her unless we know for sure we can get to them. But, you know, Hunter, on the other hand, just immediately, and he was like this with his sisters, immediately, he'll hold the baby. He'll cuddle the baby. He'll sing to him. He sings him Jesus Loves Me. He cuddles with them. He teaches them things. Hunter things, but he teaches them things. And it's just the awe that comes over me for that.
Yeah.
Those are the things that he recorded. Those are the things that stuck. So it kind of helps me looking forward to when our girls have kids and they start bringing nieces and nephews over. Oh, Uncle Hunter's going to spoil the crap out of these kids. He may not be able to do, you know, the financial stuff and some of the other things, but boy, he's going to spoil the crap out of them people.
Well, I think he might, because I'm intent on starting that business so Hunter has a place to go.
Oh, dude, let him loosen a toy store and say, let's go buy your niece and nephew something. He's going to go haywire.
Well, I'm intent on doing it because I believe it'll give him a sense of purpose there, mm-hmm. give him a place to meet people, give him a place
Make
to serve
quarters.
People. Yeah. And then he'll be able to have money to spend on himself and other people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that's driving me. And shoot, who knows what happens? He's a pretty good athlete. Who knows what happens when the guy gets to the Special Olympics and has an opportunity there. But it was important to me because I was telling a friend of mine, like I say, this story of what we went through from, you know, having all the kids and, you know, nearly losing our home. Seizures after seizures and
nearly
brain surgeries. What's that?
Nearly losing a couple of kids.
Yeah, nearly losing a couple of children. The molestation from those people that molested our children. And on and on and on. And, you know, the fact is that with things being stacked against us, it all came down to why we stuck together. And the belief that I have that we had plenty of excuses to go our own way.
Mm-hmm.
But we chose us. And we chose us and we chose to reinvest in ourselves and in our relationship in our children.
I just told that to a friend this morning that was going through something. It's like, you know what? I know you got a lot of circumstances. I know you got a lot of crap going on. But they don't define your relationship. You do. You choose to either let these things dictate your relationship and make it whatever, or you choose to separate the circumstance from the relationship, and you choose what you're going to do. We had to make a lot of choices. Multiple times, we had to make a lot of choices. But ultimately, we had one non-negotiable from the beginning. Divorce is not an option. We agreed. There's very few things that could make that happen. And even then, both of us were kind of like, it would have to be really bad. It would have to be. But even then, it was just like, this is not an option. So either we fight for it, or we fight each other until we figure it out, but it's not going to go away. I just won't.
Well, the one thing that we both were, to varying degrees at different times,
stubborn as hell.
We were both willing to do this.
Mm-hmm.
We were willing to, you know, secede some ground. We were willing to confront our resentments, our bitterness, our anger, our frustration, our disappointments. And a lot of times that can be channeled at your spouse when that's not deserved. And I firmly believe that even through this struggle and this turmoil, you know, us choosing each other, choosing our relationship, is something that God honors, and He has really ordained us to reach marriages to say, if you're willing, you can make this the best imaginable relationship you've ever had in your life. And by far, Jeannie and I are not perfect at this marriage thing. But the goal is not perfection. We had a show talking about the perfect marriage where we actually came to the conclusion that we do have a perfect marriage, because it involves and it incorporates love and forgiveness. It incorporates intention, intimacy, and the desire to build those things. But the standard for us is excellence. And what that means is that you're intentional with what you do and you live intentionally, heart forward first, to the people that matter the most. And like Jeannie's talking about, when situations come up, you compartmentalize them so that you can take a step back and look at the whole body of work for your relationship and understand that one situation, you know, there's a caveat, but one situation should not define your entire relationship. Mm. And right here in the moment shouldn't define your entire relationship. Because I you know, as Jeannie and I have gone on, we have fought less and less about things. So you might sometimes have the tendency, when you have a little problem or a situation, you blow it out of proportion. But as long as you guys can both come to terms and say, I guess that was stupid. And then, you know, you're thankful for what it is that you have in your relationship. And you honor each other and you live these techniques and you grow. And when you screw things up, you admit it and you endeavor to get better. You endeavor to grow. So, man, it's hard sometimes not feeling like an absolute failure. I don't believe I am, but that doesn't mean I don't feel like it sometimes.
Oh, I know. I understand. Trust me.
And if you yourself, you know, face challenges like this, or you yourself, holy cow, at the time. If you see me on video, I took my glasses off because of the glare, and the time is something else. But if you find yourself in this place where you feel lonely, where you feel broken, where you feel like a failure, you are not alone. We're here. We are here to help you and to help pull you through this. So reach out to us. Reach out to us so that we can help you. If you know someone, maybe you and a friend were talking about this the other day and you know somebody, share this episode. Share this podcast. Share these videos. It's extremely important that we invest in the people around us, but that we invest in the people under our roof to grow and to honor this commitment that we've made. I really thank you. I thank y'all for listening. Thank you for listening, honey. It's deeply appreciated. Let us know how we can help. Anything else?
No.
Okay, you know the email address, Quincy@mvsmpodcast.com. I'm going to spell it for you. Hope I don't get it wrong. Quincy@mvsmpodcast.com. That's like man versus marriage.
You're going to misspell your own name?
It's happened. Actually, the tendency is when I say Quincy, M-O-U-S-I, I don't know why, but it just happens all the time, and I don't want to do that. So, you know, when you're thinking about something, sometimes you can screw it up. Anyway, that's all for this episode. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for investing your time and trusting us with your time. And if we can help you, you know how to reach us. So do it. We definitely want to hear your story. That's Jeannie Moran. I'm Quincy Moran. And this is Man vs. Marriage, the podcast.